First up today, Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is back to field your questions about the inexplicable behaviors of your dogs and cats. Dr. Hunhausen runs the Westwood Animal Hospital in lovely downtown Westwood, Kansas, and he's an animal behavior specialist. And Wayne, always good to have you.
Good to be here. Welcome back. Good to see you again, Steve.
And if our listeners have questions about their dogs and cats, a great time to call is right now, 816-235-2888. Again, 816-235-2888. Or send us an email to uptodate@kcur.org or tweet us at @kcuruptodate. Well, Wayne, here comes the cold. People bundle up in wintertime. Should you bundle up your dog or cat, too? And how do you approach all that?
Well, it really depends on the pet. And if you have an older pet that has maybe a thin hair coat or short hair, then I would certainly think about that. So a little thin coated chihuahua would benefit on a really cold day from having a sweater on. You take a big fluffy dog that's energetic and active on the walk or on the dog park, you're probably not going to need that.
But why don't dogs need or cats need something on their paws?
The paws are pretty thick. There's a lot of padding there. They've got the thick cornified pad there that's protective and provides some inflammation. There's a layer of fat underneath there. And
so they don't feel the cold coming through the pavement or through the grass or anything else.
Like we would, for sure. But, they do real well in regard to tolerating the cold on their pads. If you do have problems and if it gets really cold, and especially if you get these little spicules of ice, that can be painful and that can abrade the pads. In those cases, the pet would benefit from little doggy pad socks and
they
and,
sell those things?
Boots, yes.
Of course they sell those
sure.
things.
Iditarod dogs wear them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, do most dogs allow their owners to put a hat or a sweater around them fairly easily, or can that be a real challenge for some pets?
Sweaters are usually not too much of a challenge. A hat's a different issue. But it really depends on the temperament of the pet. Some pets are really tolerant, and some pets, no, they wouldn't even tolerate maybe a sweater on.
Are anything to be cautious of? Are some pets allergic to that kind of fiber in a sweater or a little jacket?
That's possible. It's not real likely, but it's possible you could have a contact allergy to the wool in the sweater or maybe the dyes in the sweater. And certainly if you notice the pet's itchy during the walk or after the walk each time it wears it, then you've got to consider that.
How cold does it have to get before you'd advise an owner of a pet to begin thinking about bundling up your pet as well?
Well, again, that depends on the pet. And some, it's going to be warmer for these little kids without much body fat. When it's get around the 30s, then you might think about bundling them up. For the pet that has a little bit heavier coat, they're going to tolerate colder weather and maybe not need to be bundled up till it's down in the teens.
Okay, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, uptodate@kcur.org. Dee from Overland Park, you're on with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a problem. I have a little small teacup poodle, or toy poodle, and she goes out in the yard and rolls in anything that is excrement from another critter.
And yeah, that'd be a problem, Dee.
And I say this. Yeah, she does it, and I bathe her, and then 2 days later, she'll go do it again. And I know that's something to do if they want to get the smell of the other animal out or something, but it's annoying.
Well, why would a dog, or I guess in this case a dog, why would a dog do that, Wayne?
Boy, that's a good question.
You haven't figured that out yet.
There are a number of theories out there. Yeah. Some people suggested that maybe from the wolf, the dog's ancestor, that possibly if they're out hunting that they can mask their smell by rolling in some organic material that has a real strong odor. Some dogs just seem to delight in having the odor. It's just a fun. Just fun for them. I had a dog that when I was in veterinary school, we lived out in a rural area with about 20 acres and a creek. And if there was a dead fish on the bank, that was my dog's preferred scent. Mm-hmm. Dead fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's the difficult behavior to correct, and basically
because it's so innate, it seems.
I think it's innate for some of these kids. And when you're trying to shape a behavior, you really, in a lot of cases, you have two choices. You can either try to reinforce an opposite behavior, an incompatible behavior, so the dog doesn't do it. So, for example, if a dog jumps up on you, you teach it to sit. And if it's sitting for a treat, every time somebody walks in the front door, it's unable to jump up. So you can positively reinforced and opposite ritualized behavior, or you can make it provide something aversive or unacceptable to the dog when it does it. You know, you're thinking about punishment or interruptions or things like that. And if you take the same example, the dog jumps up, instead of rewarding it for sitting, you could make a loud noise like a shake can or a whistle or something to stop the behavior.
I hold her paws. She's deter. I just hold on to her paws and she tries to get away and I don't let her.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't like that. So she's a little bit better. But this is a horrible dog. She's just awful.
Well,
Yeah,
for your kid, what you might want to try, you could take a peanut can, one of these, like a Planters peanut can, empty the peanuts out, put about a half a dozen quarters in there and tape it shut. And then if you know where this organic material is that the dog's going to roll in, you watch the dog very, very closely. And without saying anything, as soon as the dog starts to sniff or show some interest in that material, toss the can so it lands a few feet away from the pet. And you want to – we don't want to scare the dog. We just want to provide a startling interruption so the dog starts thinking, gosh, if I get close to this thing with this much odor, then there's going to be some of this loud noise, and maybe I'm just going to start avoiding it in the future. So that's.
I've got hedge apples in my yard. I could clock her with one of those.
No, no. We're not clocking. We're interrupting.
Yes.
I know.
Yes.
Listen, if you've been through as many times as I have, you want to clock her.
Well, Dee, let us know how it plays out for you. Okay.
All right, I'll try that. That sounds like a pretty good idea.
Okay, good luck.
Get you in the act. Mm-hmm.
All right,
you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Dr. Wayne Hunhausen with the Westwood Animal Hospital is in the house here visiting with us this morning about your pet's unusual behaviors. If you have a problem that you're up against and need some expert advice, 816-235-2888 or our email address UpToDate at kcur.org. Tamara from Shawnee, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Tamara.
I have a lab retriever mix. She's about 3 years old, and she is really afraid of thunderstorms.
Mm.
Well, that's a pretty...
Tried giving her... the vet suggested giving her a Benadryl to help kind of calm her down, but I didn't know if there were any other behavior modifications we could do. Other than just giving her medication.
Sure. You could do some classical conditioning, and that involves repeatedly exposing the pet to the sounds of a storm on a CD and associating something good like treats or play or maybe grooming or social interaction. And you can go online and buy CDs that make storm noises, and then what you do is you put it on your CD player and you gradually increase the volume until you get a response. And that's the first thing, is you got to see if you can actually fool the dog with the CD. If the dog starts to tremble when it hears the thunder on the CD, then you know you have something you can work with. And if it's at maybe 7 on the volume dial, then you dial it back down to 2 or 3, and then you play this. It should be loud enough where the pet will kind of look towards the stereo when it hears the noise, but doesn't show any anxiety. So you play this, and then you give it treats and play and make it a lot of fun. And you do this very frequently, gradually increasing the volume until the sound of thunder becomes a cue that something good's going to happen instead of something bad might happen.
It sounds like this kind of problem is more curable than perhaps our last caller with the organic material.
It can be, although, and this is the approach that's used with any kind of problem that involves fear. The problem with the success rate on this and using classical conditioning, we'll talk about medication here in a second because this can be very important. The problem here is that it's a really complex situation because you've got the sound of thunder, you've got the sound of rain, you've got lightning flashes, changes in ambient light, ozone, organic odor changes, and it's really hard to desensitize against the whole constellation of stimuli. But it's certainly worth trying. It's easy and the dog will like the treats, but it's certainly worth trying. For the dogs that have actual panic attacks where they're just out of control, and I have dogs that go through windows and chew through walls that are so panicked, then medication can be helpful. Benadryl is a sedative. So for mild cases, it'll take the edge off. But for the serious ones, you've got to go for anti-panic drugs. And so we're talking about drugs like Xanax and Valium, maybe Prozac and other medications can be used to help out.
Tamara, I wish you luck, and I want to grab a call here from Logan from Kansas City, Missouri, who has a similar kind of issue. Logan, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, thanks. Yeah.
My question is, I have a retired military working dog that I served in Iraq with, and we experienced multiple IED attacks and ambushes. And now, whenever there's a thunderstorm, he reacts very violently.
Wow.
Hyperventilates. but I've noticed that recently a lot of the times it's not necessarily the thunder. He sees the flash of lightning and will shake uncontrollably and get very nervous. I wonder if you had any ideas of how to help him deal with that flash.
Yeah, on the flash, what you could try would be a photography flash. You can buy an inexpensive flash, and then with this counter conditioning and desensitizing, you as I mentioned with the sound, you always start with the stimulus at with the stimulus very low. So in this case, I might take muslin or some type of fabric that just allows a minor flash of light. Again, it should be just enough of a flash that the pet will kind of look over there, and you can almost tell it's thinking like, is this lightning or not? It looks like lightning, but it's not very strong, and you give the pet a treat. And you do this over and over again, maybe 20 times, until that flash signals the dog will get something good. And then you gradually go to a thinner fabric, or you uncover it a little bit until you have the full force of the flash that doesn't bother the dog. And you could start inside. It'd be a good idea to take it, have somebody help you out and go outside of a window with the drapes are drawn or the blinds are drawn, and then gradually open those. But it's basically repeated exposure to a small amount of the stimulus, associate something good with it, and then allow the stimulus to get stronger and stronger as a pet improves. Again, it's this complex situation, and as behavior modifications is a good thing to try, but sometimes medication is necessary. And these dogs that have panic attacks, I mean, you can just look in their eyes; they're miserable. Mm. And it's certainly a really good place to consider behavioral medication.
Okay, great. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Wish you all the best. Good luck.
Thank you.
We're talking about pet behavior this morning with Dr. Wayne Hunhouse. Now, here's a question for you. Alex writes us this at UpToDate at KCUR.org. How do I get my dachshund to let me brush his teeth? He bucks his head so much that even with my brother helping me, it's nearly impossible to brush them. I recommend Crest. Dr. Hunhouse, that might be the solution. I don't know.
Well, It's the approach is going to be real similar to the thunderstorm problem. And we have the dog that reacts, is probably anxious about having its face handled and then having something unusual in its mouth. And so you with this pet, you're probably going to have to start out with just teaching him to look forward to having his muzzle handled. And what I would do is I'd keep
one step at a time.
Yeah, one step at a time. The first step is just getting a pet used to having hands around its head. And so you could start out with every time you maybe got some downtime, you're watching television, a pet jumps up next to you on the couch or something, have some really, really, really special treats available. And when he jumps up there, pet him on the head, give him a tiny treat. For a little dachshund, it'd be something about the size of a peanut. And then what you do that for enough times where he's looking forward to the touch on the head and the treat, and then you slide it down and you just gently touch either side of his muzzle with your hand and give him a little treat. And then you come underneath and give him a treat. And then you barely flip up the lip for a second with your finger, and then you hold the lip up longer and longer, and then eventually you put the finger from your second hand in and touch a tooth for a second, and then with a little bit of toothpaste on that finger, and then you proceed to the brush.
And you recommend brushing occasionally. This is something that's important to think about.
You're exactly right. And more than occasionally, the dog should have their teeth brushed probably at least 5 times a week to keep the plaque off. I mean, we do it twice a day, every day. And, that is a little more that you can ask for most pet owners and most pets, but you should shoot for 5 days a week if you can do more, fine. And then you mentioned Crest, and not to diss Crest, but there are a toothpaste made for dogs that they have. They're chicken flavored and fish flavored.
Oh, no kidding.
And they can be swallowed too. If dogs swallow a lot of human toothpaste and that stuff bubbles up in the stomach, and that kind of might upset their stomach.
Yeah, I want to get to this question because this time of year, this issue comes up a lot. I know some of our listeners are probably thinking about this, but, it's holiday gift-giving season, and you feel fairly strongly that giving a pet as a holiday gift probably isn't the right way to go. And tell us why you feel that way, Wayne.
Well, typically, the gift is going to be a puppy or a kitten. It's going to be a young animal, and it's going to be around 8 weeks of age. And that's a pretty sensitive period in the pet's life. It's coming into a new environment, a new people around it, and it needs to relax and learn about the new environment and people. And the commotion of Christmas in particular, you've got people in and out. You've got a lot of noise. There are going to be a lot of people people reaching for the pet that might frighten the pet. And, you know, the family's going to be have commitments for holiday parties and stuff like that. It's just not a good time to pay attention to the pet and get started on the house training and so forth. What I would recommend if you want to get the puppy, for the kids at Christmas is maybe get a stuffed dog instead. And with a little note that they're going to go out and pick out a puppy
at
a couple weeks
afterwards.
Down
the road, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not so much commotion, not so much chaos. You can do it at a more neutral time.
Exactly.
And get everyone invested here. Because, again, you know, one of the themes that sort of comes up here a lot when you're in here is, you know, taking care of a dog or a cat, at least the right way, it requires a lot of time.
It's a commitment, especially those early months of life. I mean, just like young children, it's really important you spend time with the children and that you bond, you get them guided in the right direction. It's really important with our kittens and puppies.
Okay, let's go to Phoenix from Kansas City, Missouri. Phoenix, good morning.
Morning. I have a 7-year-old corgi, and she didn't seem to find her voice until she was about 2. But I have my business in my home, and anytime anybody comes to the door, whether it's the mailman or a client, or even if we're all at home and somebody opens the door to go outside, she barks her head off. And she's got a really sharp bark. Mm-hmm. Very unpleasant. I have tried the can with the nickels in it. It'll be effective for a day, maybe 2. And I know she's smart enough to get it. That's not a problem. She just doesn't care.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. I'm so tired of the really loud, sharp barking. Mm-hmm. With regard to the door.
Yeah. Corgis can be a challenge. They're kind of hard-headed little kids.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, my wife Jan said when she looks at a corgi, it reminds her of a little gangster in a dog suit. they kind of walk in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they walk in with that attitude. Well, I would concentrate on interrupting the barking whenever she does it, even if you're alone. So even if she hears something and starts to bark, calmly say quiet and then make a loud noise. Now, if the shake hand doesn't work anymore, you can try a hiker's emergency whistle. Those are really loud. You can try a compressed air horn. Or a product I've been using lately that I really like, we have it at our practice, it's called InteroStop. And it makes an extremely loud hissing noise, and it has a pheromone in it that makes it a pretty effective product for interactive type interruption of that barking. Another tool that
and the owner has to
yes, you've got to be there to do that. Another possibility would be to fit the pet with a gentle leader head halter, and this is the halters that kind of like almost like a halter on a horse that goes around the dog's mouth. It's not a muzzle, but if the dog starts to get really active or bark, you can say stop and give a little pull, and it tightens around the mouth, and that'll help out in some social situations. And then the other possibility, in your situation, this might be something to strongly consider. There's a product called a gentle spray collar, and it's an anti-bark collar. And when the dog barks, instead of shocking it like the old conventional collars, it sprays citronella. You get this loud hissing noise, and citronella is a strong olfactory marker. The chemical is very benign, and it doesn't irritate the eyes or mucous membranes, doesn't hurt the dog, doesn't sting or anything. But the combination of the noise and unusual odor makes it a very effective and very humane product. And you can buy those. We carry those, but you can buy them get them on the Internet, too. I think maybe around $50 or so. They're not very expensive. So that might be something else to try. Now, the other important thing is once you found a way of stopping the barking, like if you're going to use the collar, then you still continue to watch the dog. And anytime the dog pricks up its ears or orients towards something it hears or sees, where it usually barks, but it doesn't because it expects you to make a loud noise or the collar to go off, give it, say, good dog, and give it a treat for being quiet. So rewarding the good behavior is just as important, maybe more important, than interrupting the bad behavior.
Absolutely. Okay, great. It's a great idea. Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Phoenix, thank you. Good luck. Okay. There's some emails here I wanted to get to, and Jim and Lee Summit writes us this. Please ask the good doctor to address the need to wash or clean off the feet of animals that have been walking on the salted winter streets. Their pads are leather and subject to painful cracking due to the salt, he writes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, salt can be a problem depending on your neighborhood and how heavily it's salted out there, and depends on your pet. Some pets that run a lot with the owners, they have pretty thick pads and they're less likely to have problems. Dogs that have long hair coat are more likely to have problems with irritation between the pads. That salt will get trapped with the ice in between the pads and that long hair coat, and it'll sit there, and that can be an irritant. So a little bit of warm water after a walk, nice way to clean that off and make sure that you don't have any problems related to that.
Pat writes us this. A year ago, my daughter and her dog moved back in with us. My daughter's dog has an issue with being left alone. She's been in the house long enough to accept the rest of us. But when my daughter is out, she is really sad. What can we do to prevent her from leaving little puddles and piles when left alone? A crate, Pat writes, is not an option.
Well, it sounds like it's separation anxiety, and we're going to assume here that the dog doesn't do this, and you know, when the owner's at home. If the dog also has mistakes once in a while when the family's at home, then you've got a house training problem, or by itself, or maybe in addition to separation anxiety problem. So with separation anxiety, you want to there's several things you want to do. Is you want to ignore the dog whenever it's pushy for attention or acts a little bit anxious when you're around, so it doesn't become dependent on having you there to feel better. You want to give it lots of exercise, at least for 4 weeks while you start working on this. So mm-hmm. I try to get the dog out for fast speed walks or jogging twice a day, if possible. You know, you do what's practical for you and your schedule. And then you need to teach the dog to be alone. It's good to be alone. And what I recommend, and this is part of my program for my separation anxiety patients, is to do mock departures where you leave the dog alone really, really frequently, but only for 30 seconds to start out with. And so in the evening when you're at home, you'll have a toy like a Kong toy, and periodically, maybe every time there's a commercial comes on the television, you wipe a little bit of cheese inside of it and say, see you later, and give it to the dog and walk out the door. But just for 30 seconds, and then you come back in, and if the pet's licking on it, great, just let it finish it up, and then maybe in another 20 minutes or 30 minutes, you do it again. You also do it before you go to rooms. Instead of allowing it to go into every room with you around the house and follow you all the time, get in the habit of giving the dog the toy with the food, say, good dog, give it to it, walk in the bedroom door, put a sweater on, whatever you do, and leave the dog by itself. So the dog's learning that you're always going to come back when it gets left alone, so you're doing this real frequently. It learns you're going to come back. It's not going to lose you, and it also gets something really, really good every time you walk out the door and leave it, so it starts hopefully looking forward to seeing you go.
Again, this sounds pretty easy, but I imagine it takes a little time.
It takes some dedication, certainly.
Yeah.
And then when you are gone, give it 5 or 6 toys. And with the Kong toys, you can actually freeze food in those toys to make the food dispensing and licking last a lot longer. So that can help out. If it's not real bad, there's a pheromone product called Adaptil, A-D-A-P-T-I-L, and it's a plug-in diffuser. It has a dog pheromone that'll help out with mild cases. For really serious cases, then sometimes medication might be necessary.
Okay.
One other thing I would suggest, in all the places where the pet's soiling, clean up the odor and put a little bowl, make it a feeding station. Put a little bowl down there, feed the dog a little bit of dry food at dinner time, then leave the empty bowl with a food scent there. Most pets won't eliminate where they eat every day. And so that will protect those areas, and that'll slow some of the soiling down too.
That's interesting. Okay. Tess from Kansas City, Missouri. Tess, you're on Up to Date with Dr. Wayne Hunhausen. We're talking about quirky animal behavior. Good morning, Tess.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a miniature poodle. He's about 4, and he is super smart. And when we leave the house, he gets into the trash by actually somehow, I've never seen him do it, but opening a cabinet. So we have now moved the trash into our powder bathroom, which is highly inconvenient, but it's sort of near the kitchen. And we, you know, open and close the door. Now he has learned to open a closed door. And so he knows he's done something wrong, because when we come home, if he hasn't done it, he will greet us happily, so excited to see us. And if he has done it, he stays on the couch low and sort of ashamed. And then he gets off and he slowly walks to it with his tail behind. You know, meanwhile, the trash is everywhere. So I don't know how to stop this behavior because we're not home.
Okay. Here's a suggestion that should work for you. The best place for the trash sounds like it's in the kitchen behind the cabinet door that he can open. What you want to do is go to a luggage store, a travel store, a Radio Shack, or a large hardware store, and ask for a doorknob alarm. There are these little plastic boxes with a ring that hang on the doorknob so that if an intruder wiggles the doorknob, it moves, it makes a really loud noise. And they usually go off for about 4 or 5 seconds and then turn themselves off. And you can hang that on the knob. to that pantry. So if he tries to get in there, he'll bump that. It'll make a loud noise and just teach him to stay away from there. And then it, eventually when it looks like he's leaving it alone, then you can take that away. But those are really nice. I use those on cabinet doors like that. I'll hang them on the side of a trash can in a bathroom so the dog gets his nose in the trash can and bumps it. It makes a loud noise. You can hang those on drapes or blinds. Or some dogs get excited and chew on the blinds when they see somebody walking outside. And they're inexpensive. You can usually get those for under $20.
Oh, excellent. Okay, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much.
Best of luck.
Good luck. Okay. Well, Wayne, always a pleasure to have you here. I'm sorry we couldn't get to all our calls today. Dustin, Pam, Jenny, and Mary, and emails from Gary. But Dr. Wayne Hunhausen will be back in a few weeks, and we'll do it again. And always a pleasure to have you here, Wayne.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
Okay, that sounds good. Time for a break. When we come back, we'll visit with one of the great portrait photographers in this country. His name is Gregory Heisler, and he's taken photographs of everyone from O.J. to Michael Bloomberg to Carl Lewis. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star. And you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.